It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Tonight, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
In the middle of the desert on the love bus. All right, today's a special day. We're getting towards the end of the year, and it's time to talk to our friends that know what's up, or we need to know what they know so we know what's up. You know, we got Peter Schiff coming on in just a second, and then followed by Gerald Celente, and both animated and going to tell us, from the truth about things. Now, I did some, research last night. I wanted to watch an old Peter Schiff and see how that's the same thing. He's been telling us for years, from 12. He's like, look, I tell you what happened. And this is what's going to happen, and it's happening. So that's who we need to talk to. Peter Schiff from Europac.com, EuropaC.com, or SchiffGold.com. Peter Schiff, the first thing, I do want to get into some, mass psychology here and what we can expect and how things are going to roll out and so on. But the fundamentals of what's coming, what's going to happen, between the eyes, Peter, give it to us, man. What do we got to look forward to? What's already happened and we can't stop?
Well, I think we have a complete financial disaster to look forward to. In fact, look at the trade numbers that were released about a half hour ago. Merchandise trade deficit for November shattered expectations, hitting a new all-time record, $97.8 billion in a single month. That's a 17.5% increase over the prior month. But these are horrific trade figures. And everybody wants to talk about the U.S. recovery and how strong the economy is. Strong economies generate surpluses, not deficits. It's weak economies. America is being kept afloat by life support from the rest of the world. The rest of the world is producing the goods that our weak economy is incapable of producing. All we can do is produce money that we print. The Fed prints money, and then we take that money and spend it by buying the products that are made by stronger economies abroad who are willing to accept the paper that we print for the goods that they produce. And the question is, Ernie, how much longer will the world be dumb enough to continue with this exchange?
Yes, because that is the question. How much longer?
Yeah, I don't know, but the inflation is already apparent to everybody. It's no longer, their government is no longer able to hide the effects of inflation on consumer prices, because consumer prices are rising so much that even the government's data can't hide it. The government now is admitting to 7% inflation based on the CPI.
Yeah,
the real rate of inflation is about 15%, which means it's worse now than at any year in the 1970s. And so, when you hear these reporters say, well, it's at least it's not as bad as it was in the 70s, it's worse. And that's because we had a more honest CPI that we used in the 1970s to measure inflation. If we measure today's inflation using the identical CPI that we used to measure it in the 70s, we would have 15%. So it is completely disingenuous to claim that it's not as bad as it was in the 70s, when in fact it's already worse, and it's going to get much worse because we're not doing anything about it.
You know, when I first started doing radio in 03, it wasn't a year or two went by when the consumer price index that they used to determine cost of living adjustments, you know, COLA for entitlements like Social Security and so on, all of a sudden they changed it to where it didn't include housing, energy, or food. And I go, so if you don't live any, if you live underneath a bridge and don't buy anything or go anywhere, you don't have inflation. So I didn't believe anything they said probably before then, but sure as hell since then. It's just they just make it up as they go.
Well, it's even worse when it comes to housing, because in the 1970s, home prices, right, the price of a home was part of the CPI. Now, we got the home price numbers out yesterday. The year-over-year gain in prices for homes is about 18%. That is a huge number. The year-over-year increase in rents is not too much less than that. I think it's around 13-15% is how much rents have gone up. And of course, housing costs are a lot more than rent or the price to buy. You've got utilities, you've got maintenance, you've got taxes. I mean, everything about home ownership or renting a home is skyrocketing. But the government, when they put in a number to the CPI for housing, which is about a third of the CPI, maybe even 40%, it is the biggest single component, because obviously shelter is very important. In fact, most people spend more money on shelter than on any other item in their budget. For a lot of Americans, you're talking 30-40% or more of their incomes are spent on rent or housing. So that's why it's such a big part of the CPI. But the government doesn't actually use the rent that anybody pays or the price that anybody pays to buy a home. They make up a number called owner's equivalent rent. And it's a fantasy. Nobody actually pays owner's equivalent rent. They supposedly take a survey and ask homeowners to guess, you know, what they could rent their house for if they rented it out, and to compare that to what they guessed the prior year. And that number came out at 3.5% for year over year. So that's the number that goes into the CPI. So instead of putting in an honest 15 or 20% for a third of the CPI, they put in 3.5%. And so that's actually working to lower the CPI to about, you know, 7%. But if they used an honest number for housing, that alone would push the CPI over 10%. But of course, there are many other lies in the CPI that are also working to artificially suppress the reading.
You know, we got such limited time, and there's so much to cover, and I just want to ask some pointed questions. Everything, when you did Crash Proof and predicted what was coming, then it came, then they, what really needed to happen, all the malinvestment needed to be flushed out, you know, capitalism needed to work, it needed to, you know, make sure, you know, allocation of resources and prices and all that fundamental doctrine economic leave it alone thing. They didn't. They're building it up. It's going to be worse. What's going to be worse? You know, what are we looking at as an inevitability versus the amazing hat trick, you know, pull rabbits out of their hat thing of they kick it down the road one more election cycle. And I'm wondering, what do they have to do? And it's just print more money, but that's going to make it. When's the total abandonment of the dollar, which is what we're really waiting on, right?
Yeah, well, I don't know when the world's going to finally abandon the dollar. It should have done that a long time ago. It will. And in fact, the longer it takes to abandon it, the more likely it is that it will be abandoned, because we continue to exploit that fact. As long as the world is willing to accept our money, we'll keep printing it. And as long as this arrangement takes place, we continue to grow more and more dependent on the rest of the world. And, you know, if you think about the enormity of the trade deficits now, we're talking about almost $100 billion a month. That's $1.2 trillion a year of goods that we get to consume that we don't have to produce. Imagine what would happen if you just removed those goods from the U.S. economy. What if those goods were not here? What if there was nothing on the shelves? What if the Fed printed money and there was nothing to buy with it? If you think we have a bad inflation problem now, wait till you see how much worse it's going to get when the world rejects this relationship and decides to keep its stuff. Because right now, the world is sending us all the merchandise that it produces, and we're sending them the paper we print. What happens when they decide the stuff that they make is more useful than the money we print? And they say, you know what? We're going to keep all of our merchandise. We're going to keep all of our consumer electronics. We're going to keep all of our furniture. We're going to keep all of our, you know, food or all the things that we make and ship to America. We're going to keep all that stuff and we're going to use it ourselves. And America, we're just going to have these little pieces of paper that the Fed prints. What is that paper going to be worth when there's absolutely nothing on the shelves to buy with it?
I don't know. I thought it was going to go way before now. I'm flabbergasted that we're able to do what we're doing as long as we're doing it. But there has to be steps that precede when the collapse come. And those steps would be, you know, one, a simple abandonment of the dollar as a reserve currency, which are making moves that way. You know, there's going to be another payment system that take over from where SWIFT is, where we can move money around the world just to do trade and got to buy tankers of oil kind of thing. Well, the petrodollar will start going. You know, they'll deal in precious metals. They'll go to, you know, another currency, another basket of currencies, another digital currency. So what do you think the plan is? If it's inevitable what's coming, somebody's got a plan to either replace it, fix it, prop it up, change it, turn it into purple script money, something. What do you think it is?
Well, I don't think there is any plans. A lot of people, or certainly people in government, don't even understand that this is going to happen. They're going to be as surprised, if not more surprised, by the dollar crisis than they were by the 2008 financial crisis. But I do think that there are other countries around the world, like China, like Russia, that understand that the dollar's days are numbered. And so they are moving more of their reserves away from U.S. dollars towards other fiat currencies like the euro, like the Japanese yen, and towards real money, gold. You've seen those central banks and other central banks have been steadily increasing the amount of gold that they hold in reserves and reducing the dollar weighting. And so they're moving slowly at this point. I think they really need to step up the pace at which they divest themselves of dollars. And of course, when they divest of dollars, they also divest of U.S. treasuries, because when the world's foreign central banks are holding dollars, you know, they're not sticking dollar bills, you know, under a giant mattress. They're buying U.S. treasuries. And so they're loaning the money back to the United States. So actually, we get a double benefit from our trade deficits. One, we get to consume goods that we didn't have to produce. And two, the countries that did produce those goods for us loan us the money, because they take the money that we print and send over there, and they buy U.S. treasuries and mortgage-backed securities. And so that keeps interest rates low. So prices and interest rates are both artificially low because of this relationship, but it's actually a parasitic relationship that we have with the world, where we're feeding off the world. The world is having to shoulder the burden of supporting a weak U.S. economy. And when they no longer want to shoulder that burden, then it's, you know, it's game over here in the United States, and we're going to be faced with a very bleak reality when it comes to a,
you know, we hear this all the time, and there's always signs of it, and we can, and I've seen you talk about the European Union, you know, the ECB is not as bad off as we think that is. they're not as bad as the U.S. Is that still true?
Yeah, they're not as bad. I mean, they're not good. They're just less bad. And, you know, we'll see what they do with their inflation problem, because they have a problem too. I mean, they have a trade surplus as a, you know, as a community. The European Union has a trade surplus. And of course, it has a large trade surplus with the United States, like every other nation on the planet does. But they've printed too much money. They've kept interest rates too low. They've unleashed a huge inflation problem in Europe, to the dismay of the Germans and those people that still believe in sound money over at the Bundesbank. But we'll see what kind of pressure they bring on the ECB, because the ECB for years has been justifying its low interest rates based on the absurd contention that inflation was too low and that they needed more inflation, as if somehow a cost of living that increased faster was a positive development for Europeans. I mean, it's so absurd to say that prices aren't going up enough, and so our goal is to make sure they go up more because they weren't going up 2%. Well, now they're going up way more than 2%, and so far the ECB has done nothing about it. All they've done is that, well, they've said in the future we are going to reduce the amount of stimulus that we're supplying. You don't put out a fire by reducing the amount of gasoline that you're pouring on it. You have to stop pouring gasoline on, and they don't realize that in Europe. They don't realize that here.
Well, this is a philosophical, you know, approach. What you're talking about is, you know, this is what always happens when you do this, don't do that. And they go, nuh-uh. You know, so they don't care. You know, and you would like, you would see it in things like precious metal prices, which is, you know, of course, I'm, you know, an advocate that there's, you know, freaking manipulation. But, you know, that only lasts for so long. So are we going to see this reach into gold and silver? I mean, I know you'd think it already happened. What's holding it down?
Yeah, you know, it's kind of ironic what's happened this year. And it's been very, I guess, frustrating for a lot of precious metals investors. But really, what precious metals bulls should be doing is taking advantage it really amounts to a gift. And here's what's been going on. So last year, the conventional wisdom was that there was no inflation and there was nothing to worry about. People like me were saying there's going to be a lot of inflation. Buy gold. The Fed is
wrong. It's transitory.
Right. Now, all the people that were surprised by what should have been obvious, the spurt in inflation, they now believe that inflation is bad for gold. And now, why do they think that? Because obviously inflation is good for gold. That's why you own gold, is so because there's inflation. And the more inflation, the more you want to own gold. Well, the theory on Wall Street is, now that we have this unexpected surge in inflation, the Fed is going to have to fight inflation. The Fed is going to therefore withdraw the stimulus. The Fed is going to be tightening monetary policy. They're going to be raising interest rates sooner than we thought. They're going to be ending QE sooner. And this tight Fed, this hawkish Fed, yeah, is going to hurt the gold market. Because if cheap money is good for gold, well, then tight money is bad for gold. And that the market is looking forward to that and factoring that in, except less loose is not tight, right? As long as interest rates are negative, that is very bullish for gold. It doesn't matter if they're less negative, but the reality is they're not. Inflation is accelerating even faster than the Fed is tightening, and they're not even tightening because rates are still at zero. And in fact, if you look at the Fed's projections, 2 years from now, at the end of 2023, rates will still be below 2%. How are you going to fight 7% inflation with rates below 2%? That's negative 5%. And in fact, it's not even 7%, it's 15%. So you've got negative 13% interest rates. The opportunity cost of not owning gold is enormous, because you lose 13% a year of your purchasing power sitting in cash. So when the investors understand this, because they expect the Fed to successfully fight inflation, they're wrong. They won't succeed, and they probably won't even fight because they would lose the fight. So why even pick one? All they're doing now is bluffing and pretending they're going to fight inflation when they've done nothing to fight it. In fact, if they could fight inflation, they would have already done it. The reason they haven't done it is because they can't, and the markets haven't figured that out yet. When they do, that's, price of gold is going
to
soar.
Okay, now that's what I, you know, wanted to get to. It's like economic policy by press release. You know, it's just, it's lying. You know, they're not going to do it. And this is something you've been calling all this time. When they go, oh, we're going to taper. Oh, we're not going to have a QE 47. We're not going to. And you're going, no, you have to, because the second you guys stop doing the stimulus, the second you start, you stop finding an excuse, be it COVID, you know, whatever the hell excuse, you know, comes up. In, it was fall of 19, in October of 19, when the, the repo window, you know, the overnight lending thing, and they were, you know, here comes the Fed, and I'm going, that's it, we're done. That's when Donna and I made the decision to take the love bus and go on the road, which that trip is just now finishing at the end of the year. And I'm going, okay, so now we're coming back to Arizona. We're going to get back to local activism. I'm going to, you know, build my house and get a place out in the desert, and we're doing that now, and we're, all right, we're going to build. Well, this is one thing I feel that I'm up against I wanted to talk to you about. I am like, I want government to do the main thing that it was created to do, protect my individual rights. If it doesn't do that, it's time to alter, abolish, it's my right, my duty. I'm going, nope, nope, nope. The whole reason you guys exist is to protect my right to my life, my liberty, my property, my pursuit of happiness. And that, big part of that, is out in the middle of the desert, the nothing, I get my land, build my house, and I don't need none of your money. I don't want to, you know, get a mortgage. I want to build, you know, I'll put all the, you know, sweat equity into it and build my mud hut of whatever, okay? I anticipate, and it's going to be 22 is going to be the year that we demonstrate this. I anticipate that they don't want me to own anything, and they want me to like it. And that comes down to property. This has been a big, giant property. And we got BlackRock, you know, making the point that's just created by the Fed to spend the money into the whatever. And they all of a sudden, I hear they'll own everything, then nothing kind of deal, you know. What is the philosophy that we're up against? I get the impression, correct me if I'm wrong, that this entire thing is to make the, you know, asset allocation from the middle class and everybody else theirs. And they keep going the 1% or the elite or something. Like, I'm going, man, it's way more elite than that. It's down to like a handful of they, them, those won't leave me alone, is setting up to have the big giant, we didn't have to conquer the world. We just had it crash, and then we bought it for pennies on the dollar. This has happened many times in history, and on a much grander scale now. This is a takedown of the threat to they, them, those, which has always been the middle class and the prosperity of the vast majority of people that live in America. And the only way that they could do it was to take away our freedom, take away our productivity, take away and have us just be slaves to them. So I see so many examples of that. What's your opinion?
Well, look, it's actually much simpler than that. You've got a bunch of politicians who want to get reelected, right? That's their job, right? Their job is to get reelected. All this talk about helping the country, helping the people, that's just what they say to get reelected, right? They don't care about the country. They don't care about anything other than their own job, right? That's their job. They go to work every day, and their job is to get themselves reelected, right? Because they get the congressman, or they sit for election every 2 years, right? So they're constantly trying to get reelected. The senators, you know, they've got a longer term, but they're still always looking at the next election. They're constantly trying to raise money and promote that. Now, when you want to get reelected, the last thing that you want is a problem in the economy, right? Because the voters are going to want to throw the bums out when things go wrong. And so you don't want to get thrown out. So you don't want anything to go wrong. You want to try to keep the voters happy and make them think that everything is okay. And so they're constantly motivated to try to put a Band-Aid on any cancer just so the voters don't see it. Doesn't matter that it's going to get worse and they'll eventually die, right? What I care about is, look, I want to make sure you don't know there's anything wrong because you might take it out on me. And so we get these kind of solutions that aren't solutions. They actually make the problem worse, but we kick the consequences down the road. And of course, the other motivating factor for politicians is dependency, because politicians know that if they can make a voter dependent on government, they can count on that person's vote. So they don't necessarily like a prosperous economy in that when people are doing well, they don't think they need the government, right? But hey, I'm on my own, everything is going well. It's when people are in trouble that they reach for the helping hand of government without realizing that the helping hand of government is not very helpful. In fact, it's the government hand that is likely keeping them in poverty or causing a lot of the problems that is causing them to seek out government solutions. So, but if the government can maintain dependency, right, making you dependent on a government check, whether it's a welfare check or a stimulus check or a Medicare or some kind of housing voucher, right, now the people who are receiving those government checks, they're going to vote for any politician that promises to continue those checks, and they will vote against anybody who threatens to take that away. And so you've got that motivation. You've got, we want a dependent voter so we can count on their vote, and we don't want the economy to crash because we don't want people to blame the government for problems and vote for some new people because we don't want the new people. We want, you know, we want to stay in our job because these guys that work in government, they make a lot more money than they would be able to make in the private sector where they actually had to do something, accomplish something, compete. They have a cushy job. They're overpaid. They don't really have to do much work other than getting reelected. They get all kinds of perks and privileges that private citizens don't enjoy. And so they don't want to lose any of that. And that's really what's going on. I mean, they're not smart enough to be intentionally doing this to us. They're just pursuing their own self-interest, and that's the problem.
I look at when politicians, of course, they act in whatever they perceive to be their best interest. You know, I give you that. But at some point, is there ever a point that they, damn, this house is on fire? They wake up and go, oh no, I really do care about people and the children and the future and all this other stuff. Are they just sociopaths? I mean, do they just don't care. They don't have any empathy. They don't. I mean, that's what I'm seeing. That there is no political solution. This is going to happen. They are going to rocket sled it down to the bottom, and you know we're left to pick up the pieces in barter trade and 90 me some silver dime cards. You know, so is it going to that? Is that inevitable? Is there some white knight? Is there a guy on a horse? Is there something? What has to happen to avoid what you know is coming and define what you know is coming? How does this manifest? I just went through Christmas, okay? I have extended family. We've been gone, you know, for over, you know, since last Christmas. We get back. And the difference I've seen is, hey, did you hear about, it's like I got to do the fear porn. I go, yeah, you think that, okay, you've come this far, you discovered that? Well, let me tell you what's really going on. It was all a plan. This is going to come crashing down around you. You need to, I mean, how far do you go? What are you dealing with, you know, newly acquired friends and acquaintances and that, the Christmas party? I mean, you just, you know, shut your mouth and be quiet, which I know Peter likely doesn't do. But you know, I'm what do you say? How bad do you got to prepare people for what's coming? And how do you describe on the street what's going to happen when you talk about things that aren't on the shelf. Gold and silver shooting up just simply because, you know, they have to. You know, oh my God, silver becomes part of trade and commerce regardless of what the government does or bans. Here comes a digital currency. Everybody's going to get a universal basic, digital in there. Grandma's got to learn to use her smartphone. You know, give me some prediction for 22 that you think, yep, I'm pretty sure this is what's going to happen in your crystal ball.
Well, there's, I know that inflation is going to continue and it's going to get worse. And nothing that the Fed is going to do is going to reduce inflation. Right? The Fed is going to be fanning the fires of inflation as it's pretending to put it out, right? So we know that inflation is going to get worse. But the government is not going to do the right thing until it has no choice. And then even then, it may not. But what I mean by that is the government is not going to try to avert a crisis. The government is going to wait until there is a crisis, right? And then when there is a crisis, then they will act. The question is, will the crisis be so bad that they have no choice but to do the right thing? Because at that point, doing the wrong thing is catastrophic. And so if this next crisis is a U.S. dollar crisis, and by default to or definition, a sovereign debt crisis, a crisis in U.S. treasuries and U.S. dollars, there is nothing the government can do to make that problem go away. Because the way the government has worked in the past, whenever there was a problem, they just printed money to paper it over. So if somebody lost money, well, we print money and bail them out. That only works when the money you're printing has value. But if the dollar is the epicenter of the crisis, if the problem is the dollar is falling in value and prices are skyrocketing and interest rates are soaring because of the weak dollar, then nobody can get bailed out. Because if you create more dollars, you just weaken the dollar further. And if the weak dollar is the problem, you can't solve the problem by making the dollar weaker. So the only solution then is going to be for the government to do the opposite of what it's done every other time, which is to reduce the supply of dollars, tighten monetary policy, allow the crisis to completely run its course, allow real estate to crash, allow bonds to crash, stocks to crash, allow banks to fail, allow depositors to lose money, force the U.S. government to default on its obligations, both obligations to make interest and principal payments to its bondholders and obligations to make Social Security payments, Medicare payments, Obamacare. All of these commitments are going to have to be defaulted on, because there will be no way for the government to honor those commitments in an environment.
No, they'll nationalize everything.
Well, the alternative to what I'm suggesting is, going to be something worse, where, the government has wage and price controls, nationalizes the means of production, and just converts the economy into a complete, socialist
which
state.
Which is my fear, which is what I believe may be even be the intent.
But if that happens, right, the economy's not going to get better. It's just going to get much, much worse. So it's just going to go to the point where there is nothing here, right, where the entire nation is impoverished. And, we live the way people lived in the former Soviet Union.
Yeah, and maybe it has to take all our freedom, Peter. I mean, this is, all the whole purpose of government, this individual right protection, I got a deed, this is mine, my title says, and paperwork of mine. And they go, yeah, enforced by whom? Us? Well, guess what? We just said it's ours now. We haircutted you down to the, we took the follicles. I mean, we scalped
you. Yeah, but we know if the government takes over the economy, I mean, it's a disaster. I mean, look, they can't even
they
run the post
care.
Office.
Peter, do you really? See, this is what I wanted to get in the philosophical part of this. Everything, that you say of what's going to happen was always on the basis that they gave a crap. That there's even going to be a United States of America. That at some point they're finally going to slap themselves on the forehead and go, damn, we screwed that up. What if that was the goal? What if they just freaking don't care? What if they want everything? What if they're buying up all the land? And then when you get, you see what, you know, BlackRock is doing, I'm going, well, they're just buying up all the assets. You know, this is what always happens. It goes down to nothing. They buy it all up. Or hell, now they just printed the money. You know, just print it and buy it. 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 We got, that was a Greenspan thing. Oh, got to keep the housing up. Everybody's going, woohoo, my house worth a bunch now. I don't have it anymore, but it was worth a bunch. And now I got a whole bunch of this worthless money. You know, it's just, but what did they get? Stuff. And I remember during the 08 campaign, there was a woman, she had a shirt on, we were making signs and stuff, and it just hit me between the eyes, and it had the Fed did it, and it had an arrow pointing down with a dollar sign. The Fed, I go, on camera, I go, the Fed did it, Renee, what did the Fed do? She goes, they printed money and bought gold with it. And I go, whoa, if that wasn't the simplest explanation of what's going on, they just print the money and buy assets. And that is what I'm seeing is happening. Why? Is it from the make money? They don't get enough printed money or whatever? No, they just want our stuff. They just want control of everything, of us, of our assets, of our, you know, just to live out in the desert and a little old leave me aloneism. And they call it sustainable development. They call it whatever the hell. But it comes down to you don't get to do it, and it's theirs, and you better like it. You're not going to own nothing. You're going to kiss them on the boot. And I'm going, wow, this is what I'm seeing, Peter. How far off am I? I mean, you're going, well, they're going to have to this, and they're going to have to that, and they're going to, I go, they're not going to. I mean, do you have some reason to think that, you know, right at the end when it's darkest before the dawn, Uncle Sam is going to go, wow, we shouldn't have done that. Let's save the economy. Is that what you're thinking is going to happen?
Well, they can't save the economy. I mean, it's beyond saving. I mean, in fact, there's no reason to try to save it because it's a bubble. The bubble has to deflate. What we need is to allow the free market to rebuild the economy that the government already destroyed. So there's a lot of hard work that needs to be done so that we can restore our industrial capacity so that we can start producing again, saving again, and moving away from this debt finance bubble that the Fed has engineered, you know, with the help of Congress. So we're going to have to do that. But once the U.S. dollar crashes, that's it. I mean, the government can't make the problems go away. And by making government bigger, by nationalizing and usurping more power and forcing Americans to give up even more rights, the immediate impact of that is going to be to increase the level of misery and poverty in the nation. And so the question is, you know, how is the public going to react to these circumstances? I mean, I think the type of violence that we see, you know, when people are protesting, you know, some act that they think is racist or whatever it is. I mean, that's going to be nothing compared to how people are going to riot and protest when they actually have something to protest and something to riot about. I mean, circumstances are going to get really bad. You know, you're going to have a lot of people in the inner cities. Yeah, they may be getting their welfare checks, but they're not going to be able to buy anything with it, right? I mean, if the government gives you a bunch of worthless money, then, you know, you're not going to be placated. You can't go to the store and buy a bunch of cheap stuff at Walmart when there's nothing at Walmart. You go to the supermarket and there's nothing there. Yeah, you got your food stamps or whatever you call them, but there's no food. So then what happens, right? Because the politicians run out of the ability to buy the voters when the money they're paying the voters has no value.
I'm trying to see the light here. And the only thing that I can see is that there's going to be a philosophical awareness that's coming that what's been going wild. You go, yeah, but while the party's still going on, we're going to drink, and while it's, you know, it's still going, and we're still going, and we can make a little bit while it's still going, with this certainty that your grandchildren are not going to have the same country, you know, to prosper in, or even the opportunity. And I see freedom being sacrificed on some altar for them to, you know, here's some food, you know, in your tiny home that we government built you, and whatever, everything a body needs, gruel by the light rail system downtown, living in your shipping container. And this is, the government's going to come in and say, yes, we kept you breathing, But when you really want to spark an economy, you just get the hell out of the way. Just say, you're free, peace out, let me know how it works out. If they did that, you know, the American people, America would freaking kick the world's ass within immediately, just on the promise of freedom.
No, not immediately, because we're not in a position to kick anyone's ass right now, because we don't have the industrial base. We don't have the infrastructure. We don't have the supply chains. We don't have the skilled workforce. So it's going to take a while for the free market to fix what the government broke. Right?
How long a while? What do you mean a while? I'm saying
it's going to take many years. I mean, many years to rebuild the economy. I mean, we have a phony economy right now. It's based entirely on the world producing the stuff that we consume. Well, when they won't do that anymore, when we have to produce the stuff ourselves, you just can't, you know, wave a magic wand and have factories just, you know, spring into existence. It takes a long time to build them. And you can't build them without the capital, without the savings. And you need workers that know how to do it.
You know, that, and, you know, I understand what you're saying, Peter. For us to, you know, make this number go up and productivity of and how many cars and washing machines, that's not what I'm talking about. What I'm talking about is you're free, I'm going golfing. When that happens, people start to make decisions immediately. Okay, I'm free to plant a tomato in, oh my God, my front yard. Okay, I'm free to get me six chickens. I'm free to go get some land and build and start being industrial and make use of this scrap yard of, you know, weld the blah, 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 and be able to. I'm free to plan. I'm free to do. I'm free to move. I'm free, 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 free. That is a psychological thing. That is a motivator. That is the beginning of what I see all this other stuff happen. When you're free to build your factory, you're free to open, you'll launch a rocket or open Giga Berlin.
But people have to understand that in the interim, people are not going to be able to buy as much stuff as they were used to buying. They're not going to, you know, be able to travel as much or
and silver goes up.
Yeah, because people have to go back to work. People have to get retrained for new jobs. I mean, so all of this is doable, and all of this will happen if the government gets out of the way. But, you know, we have to deal with reality of the situation that we're in first, right? Because we have an entire nation that really is no longer self-reliant. People don't know how to fend for themselves. They've been coddled and taken care of by government for so long.
Freedom's the answer. So, what's the question, Peter? I'm just telling you, is that even on the radar screen, the freedom
thing? Not now.
Thing?
No. I mean, if anything, freedom is in the crosshairs. You know, the government is gunning for freedom. I mean, look at what's going on with COVID. I mean, the battle against COVID-19 is all about a battle against individual liberty. Everybody is supposed to be subservient to the collective. Like, well, we all have to do what's good for everybody else, what's good for society. So yeah, go out and get that vaccine. You know, even if you've had COVID, you know, you got to get a vaccine anyway, or go vaccinate your kids, even though the vaccines are more harmful for your kids than COVID. Well, you got to vaccinate them anyway to protect the collective, right? That the society is more important than the individual. And that is not what America is about, but the politicians want to destroy the concept of the individual in favor of the state. And that's what, you know, socialists have always done. It's always trying to elevate the state and minimize the importance of the individual. But what made America so great in the first place was that it was all based on the individual.
Yep.
The individual was supreme, he was sovereign, and, you know, we built the nation from that respect. And, you know, families were important. Not, you know, you did what was right for your family. You weren't constantly subjugating your own interests to some greater good for society. It's everybody out there pursuing their own individual self-interest. That's the beauty of the invisible hand. That's what we learned from Adam Smith. That's what makes capitalism work. not the altruist that's out there trying to do good, but individuals just trying to improve their own lot in life. Everybody doing that is what leads to the greatest outcome for society.
This is why I'm so adamant about this freedom thing. You know, it's not because it's just a flowery word or this or that. I think it's a natural state of nature, of certainly humanity. You know, it's just leave me aloneism gene or something. And they're replacing that with big tech. Now, here's one thing that I want to make sure you know about. And this is, I want to get your comment on this because I can see this coming. The manipulation in big tech manifested in this one story that we have on Freedom's Phoenix right now. Amazon apologizes after an Alexa challenged a girl 10 to put a coin on an exposed plug prong. Okay, this is what happened. A 10-year-old girl goes, oh, give me a challenge, Amazon. Amazon goes, okay, challenge accepted. Here, you know, pull out a, actually said to do this, pull a plug out of the wall a little bit so that you can see it, and then take a coin and put it between the two prongs. Boom! And the parents go, what the hell was that? Why did you, they go, oh, we're sorry, that was like a TikTok challenge that got it into the algorithm of we're telling your 10-year-old kid to go shock themselves, you know, won't happen again, okay? And I'm going, damn, that is just, you know, a manifestation of what can happen, what they allowed to happen, what did happen, and this reliance on an algorithm or a big tech of Alexa, you know, tell me what to do, I'm just, oh my God, that has to figure in the future somewhere or something, is this reliance on, you know, an algorithm or AI telling me what to do. Is humanity lost? I mean, what do you think of that scenario?
Well, I mean, obviously, I think artificial intelligence is ultimately a big positive for humanity because, you know, our standard of living is a function of the productivity that our tools are able to provide. I mean, that's why workers have higher real wages is because they have capital. They have tools that could make their labor more productive. But our tools have never been intelligent. The tools can only do what we make them do. And so there's only, you know, certain jobs that, you know, the tools will be able to do. Humans need to be there to do a lot of the other ones. But to the extent that tools become intelligent and they can now do more things, then they free up human labor to do other things. And we can have an even bigger increase in our standard of living. I mean, ideally, at some point in the future, nobody will have to work. The machines will do everything.
Okay, computers, which I don't have a problem with, Peter. I just want my own robot, okay? I'll get my fleet of robots and go out mow lawns and pay me money. That's not the problem. Hey. I don't want Alexa. I want Jarvis. I want my own AI to be me. It's mine. You're not telling anybody any. It's mine. But that's not what they're offering. They're not. They never offer you freedom. They offer you another, you know, link into the blockchain to the crown. I mean, you know, this is what I'm seeing.
But this is, you know, a lot of people, when they complain, they say, oh, you know, the computers or technology is going to replace my job, and they don't like it. You know, one way I always rebut that. I say, well, what if you had your own robot that you could send to work to do your job for you while you stayed home, and, you know, you still got paid because, you know, you just had a robot that showed up and did all your work? Would you have a problem with that? Because the robot would replace your job, but you would still get the paycheck, right? You wouldn't have to do any of the work because you would send your robot in to do the work for you. I mean, that's the world that we want to live in, where we can all go out and enjoy leisure and do what we want to do. Now, some people enjoy working, and if that's the case, well, then, you know, you could work. But a lot of people don't enjoy their jobs. Their job is a means to an end. And if they can arrive at those ends by another means where they don't have to work, then they would prefer that. So that's where we're headed ultimately in, you know, at some point in the future, if governments stay out of the way and allow humanity to continue to innovate and invent, we'll go into a world where, you know, work has been made obsolete, where people don't have to
Yeah,
work,
you rent out your Model S, and it's a robot taxi if I get my money. You know, I get it. I don't have a problem with that. My problem is the philosophy behind it. It is not empowering or freeing the individual to do what they want with their resources. Somebody's going to manage it. Somebody wants to get a cut of it. Somebody wants to have their share. Somebody wants to say what I can and can't do. Somebody, and then I go, okay, why? Because we delegated authority to do it and think for us, because we're too dumb to be able to do it ourselves. So I'm just like, this is, it's a philosophical thing with me, Peter. All of this other stuff about, you know, the dollar and how much inflation they do and the prices up, blah, 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 blah. I go, you know, I don't even care what they, if I had the freedom to compete. I had the freedom to, you know, had a competing, you know, Doge crypto or some crap, you know. I made up, you know, a friend of mine started, they have Monero, which is a crypto privacy thing. And they go, oh, shitcoin this and shitcoin that. He goes, okay, Monero. He's got, it's called Monero, and it has a bunch of great features and everything, but it's manure. It's the Monero, and having fun. And when they launch it, I know it's going to happen. It's going to go up. It'll be a pump and dump thing, but if it's got good features, it'll stick around. I know you're not a fan of crypto, but I tell you, I have, you know, some crypto, but when I get a big run-up, I take my profits in silver. I just, man, I'm McDuckett, man. I want to roll around, and I got it. But the silver's starting to get heavy to move around. So then I'm going, okay, well, you maybe need a little bit of gold, or you need a little bit. Why? You know, why should that be part of your portfolio? Are we seeing sometime in the future that, man, I need a bunch of my, you know, silver dimes to be doing some bartering? What do you think's coming?
Well, I think certainly people should have some silver. They shouldn't have any crypto. I mean, other than to gamble with. I mean, if you're the kind of person that likes to gamble, you like to go to a casino or something like that, and you want to gamble, and you like the action in crypto, you know, gambling is a zero-sum game, right? You make what somebody else loses, and that's what's going to happen in crypto. There's no net winner. There are winners and there are losers, and that's it. I mean, you're if you make any money in crypto, it's because somebody else lost it. That's basically what's going on. Now, of course, crypto is a negative sum game, especially something like Bitcoin, because the miners take a huge vig. You know, it's like a casino where, you know, the house really takes a huge rake. And so everybody loses, which is what's going to be the case in crypto. The winners are going to win less than the losers lose. But all of this is a byproduct of the Fed and the cheap money. It's just another big bubble that has been blown. And in the meantime, America is wasting considerable resources in crypto-related industries that produce nothing but worthless tokens that will eventually go away. But one of the reasons that we have such a huge trade deficit is because instead of producing goods, we're creating cryptocurrencies. And, you know, that's a big waste. And meanwhile, we have to then import the goods that we're not producing because we're producing worthless crypto instead. And so, you know, we got to burst all these bubbles and move beyond this, because the longer it goes on, the worse it's going to be.
Worse, which means what? You know, when you say
Bigger losses.
No, I mean on the street.
Weaker economy.
I remember in the Big Short, I can't remember his name, the Brad Pitt character. He goes, man, quit selling, no dancing. He's going, look, every time you lose a tenth of a percent or a percent, it goes in unemployment, 30,000 people die. You know, I mean, this is, there's real application to these numbers. You know, there's real death, dying, destruction, little children going hungry, people living in their van down by the river. I mean, you know, this is going to, you know, manifest itself in a lot of ways, and I'm going, you know, does that cross your mind? I mean, I know you're in Puerto Rico, which is getting a lot of news lately. Everybody, woohoo, we're going to Puerto Rico, you know. But the on the street here in America, when you're saying the shelves are bare, you know, then what? I mean, is there going to be unrest? And then what kind? It's, we need more communism. We need more communism. I mean, what do you think's going to happen on the street for John Q. Public?
Well, I think it's going to get pretty difficult for John Q. Public. You know, I think prices are going to keep going up, and eventually they're going to go way up. And what may even happen is that the government will start attacking the symptoms of inflation rather than the cause, which is the government and their money printing. You can already see the politicians pointing fingers at, you know, supply chains and greedy corporations, blaming them for higher prices. So I think what's going to come is that the government is going to start making it illegal to raise prices. They're going to say prices have to stay at a certain level. And when that happens, supply just disappears. I mean, you can no longer legally buy anything because the merchants can't sell it at a price that's profitable because the government's made that illegal. And so now there's nothing to buy. It's not just things cost more. You just can't even buy them, even if you have the money. And the only way you can buy stuff is to do it illegally. And of course, you won't be able to buy it illegally using, you know, your credit card, because, you know, so you're going to have cash, or you're going to have, you know, gold or silver, probably more like easily silver, or something that you can exchange in a way that the government won't be able to see that you've made the exchange, because the merchant doesn't want to risk, you know, going to jail for selling you something. So he has to sell you something in a way that the government doesn't know that you bought it. And so, you know, you're going to have this underground economy that's going to develop as people are trying to survive the scarcities that will be the result of price control.
I'm old enough to have gone through this. You know, the wage and price controls of Nixon and all this kind of stuff that happened, that's what created the Libertarian Party. You know, that's where that came from. You know, it was that, look, we're going way off the rails. Then you had, they went off the gold standard. Here comes Ron Paul. But then you go, you know, it's 50, 60 years later, and you're going, you know, wow, this should have went long time ago. And because we're world's reserve currency, and all we got to do is not stink as much, you know, but the world be a stinking, you know, this is not just America thing. This is global. We didn't even got into, I got to get to my next guest. We got to have you back on soon because we didn't even get to China. You know, real quick, I give you the last word on this. China, is it going, gone? You know, what are we looking at there?
Now, China is really the mirror image of the U.S. I mean, China has got record trade surpluses. I mean, their economy is booming in China. Look at their exports, not only to the U.S., but to Europe, the rest of the emerging markets. China is producing like crazy. Yeah, they have some problems in China. Nobody is perfect. But China, the good things far outweigh the bad. The media has totally got the China story wrong. China is going to dominate the global economy far sooner than people think. It's going to eclipse the U.S. before the end of this decade. During the 2020s, China will emerge as the largest economy in the world, and then it is going to go well above the United States. The standard of living of the Chinese is going to take off as the standard of living of America's collapses. The Chinese are going to consume what they produce, not give it to Americans. Americans are going to be stuck with the money that we print. The Chinese are going to enjoy the goods that they produce. Their living standards are going to go up. The value of their assets are going to go up in relation to the U.S. They're going to get a lot richer. We're going to get a lot poorer. That's part of my investment thesis. That's why I'm investing so much money outside the United States into the emerging markets, into commodities, into gold and silver, because in the post-dollar world, those assets are going to have far more value. And so what people need to do, people that are listening to your show, is recognize what's going to happen and do something about it. Don't just sit there like a deer in a headlight waiting to get hit by a car. Get out of the way. And that means get out of your dollars, U.S. assets, financial assets, bonds, stocks. You know, contact, you know, me at Europe Pacific Capital, Europe Pacific Asset Management. We can help you build a portfolio. Check out my mutual funds. They're available at pretty much any discount broker. I've got an emerging market fund, a foreign income fund, a foreign value fund, a gold fund, which invests in precious metals mining companies, foreign bond fund, all sorts of ways to protect yourself from inflation, the dollar devaluation, and to try to preserve as much as your purchasing power as you can, because most Americans are going to get wiped out. And, you know, there's no reason to be among them. I mean, there's going to be a few people that don't get wiped out, and those are the people that get their assets out of the U.S. before the bottom drops out.
You know, I'm glad you're there and people have that option. You know, this China thing, it's a freedom thing again. You know, not free to invest or to take their money out or whatever. So they put it into these ghost cities and nothing real estate. And all of a sudden the Chinese people themselves, and it's gone. You know, just like happened to us in no way, and it's gone. So it's gone. And I don't know how China is going to maintain control of a pissed off population when they give them all this promise of investment and everything. Well, you got to put it here, and it's gone. So that's the same thing I think is going to happen in the United States, is we have our retirement and my entitlement of my pension of my, and it's gone. You know, when that happens, you look at the big numbers of a country and how much it has or doesn't have or something. You know, freedom's the answer, man. What's the question? I can see that is going to be, what's all this industriousness for the individual for if you don't have a government there to protect what's yours, what you bought, what you have a deep for, what you got. I'm going to press that this year, Peter. That's going to be my thing. I'm at the age now, I just turned 60, and I always wanted to just be out in the desert, an hour away from grandkids, and have the nice out and leave me aloneism, you know, Ville. And they go, nope, and they're not going to. Then what the hell good are they? And what you're talking about is a lot of the numbers and manifestation of this philosophy and how bad it's going to be. And I'm looking at what it means on the street with me and my family. And I can see, you know, we're being, you know, led down into the cattle chute by bad guys that got an intention to slaughter us. And, you know, probably more ways than one. So I'm Peter Schiff. I'm glad you're there, man. You know, go ahead and give out your website again so people can write it down, right? Get your pen ready. Yeah. And it's on the archive, all the contact information for Peter. Go ahead one more time, Peter.
Well, europac.com is the website for the broker-dealer, Euro Pacific Capital, EUROPAC, europac.com. Also, EPAC Funds, EPACfunds.com. That's for my asset management company here in Puerto Rico. Get information on my mutual funds. Everybody should also listen to my podcasts, you know, follow or subscribe to my YouTube channel, or just go regularly to shiftradio.com. The YouTube channel is just Peter Schiff, Schiff Report. You know, subscribe. I'm honing in on 500,000 YouTube subscribers. So I've got a lot of people that are listening on YouTube. Also, a lot of people listen directly on the podcast. Follow me on social media. You know, now I have more than 600,000 people following me on Twitter. I try to put out a lot of tweets, comment on things like I did this morning about the trade deficits. The conventional media ignores all this kind of stuff. So you're going to get much better information just following me on Twitter than on, you know, you're going to get from conventional news outlets. So follow me on Twitter. I'm on Facebook, Instagram. Just look for Peter Schiff. I finally got verified everywhere. But anyway, yeah, thanks a lot. Happy New Year to you and your audience.
Yeah, thank you, Peter. And we need to have you before the end of January. Beginning, we got to talk about Puerto Rico. We got to talk about, you know, a lot of the other stuff that's going on in the space, everything. You know, Donna will be contacting you in a few weeks to do that, okay?
All right, take care.
All right, thanks, Peter. Peter Schiff, Europac.com. We'll be right back. Carol Flint Day.